Welcome to Worlds Apart. Avid reading and a hunger for knowledge have long been perceived as virtues and hallmarks of the sages, paving the way to higher consciousness. But what if I told you that one of history's most notorious dictators, Joseph Stalin, was both a devout worshipper and the highest priest of his own library? In fact, this is where he died, surrounded by books and manuscripts rather than his loved ones. How did Stalin's love of books inform his ruling style? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by Jeffrey Roberts, Emeritus Professor of History at University College Cork and author of Stalin's Library, A Dictator and His Books. Professor Roberts, it's great to talk to you in person this time. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for the invitation.
Now, your book, Stalin's Library, sets out to explore the intellectual life, biography, and I would say psychology of Joseph Stalin, whom you described as the 20th century most self-consciously intellectual dictator. And I think it's a somewhat controversial undertaking in this day and age, because in order to understand evil, one needs to engage with it rather than dismiss it and condemn it out of hand. Why did you decide to do it at this point of time?
Well, you can't look, the most important thing need to understand about my book and about Stalin is that he was an intellectual. He was a man of ideas as well as action. He believed in the transformative power of ideas, not just in terms of changing people's consciousness, but in terms of changing human nature. And as a kind of like a Marxist, a socialist, you know, he was committed, you know, not just to the transformation of human societies, but the transformation of people, including himself. So his engagement with books, with reading, with ideas, was a very profound engagement. And you can't understand Stalin as a person, but also you can't understand him as a political actor. You can't understand all the bad things that we associate with Stalin's brutal dictatorship of the Soviet Union without understanding him as an intellectual. And I wrote this book because this seemed to me, this source, his library and the books he read and how he read them, how he marked them, it is the most amazing source. It's the most intimate source, the most spontaneous source, the most revealing source. So it's an exploration of Stalin's intellectual life, his life as a reader, but it's also an exploration of Stalin as a political actor.
You also describe this T-shaped table in the room where he died, stacked with books, manuscripts, periodicals. His personal library was very, very extensive. I wonder if looking at him through this lens has changed your own opinion of him as a personality, or perhaps made your understanding of his evil nature a little bit more nuanced.
Yeah, absolutely. The reason I wrote this book actually was, okay, I've written a number of books about Stalin or connected with Stalin, but I wanted to write a wide-ranging book about Stalin, but I didn't really want to write a biography. So this seemed to be an opportunity, a kind of intellectual portrait, intellectual biography, using this particular source.
Well, it's both intellectual, but also very, very personal in a very strange way.
Sure, yeah, but I wanted to write a wide-ranging book was I hadn't really fully come to terms with Stalin as a personality and as a political actor. And so that's why I wrote this particular book. And yeah, it was a journey of discovery as far as I was concerned. And I suppose the most important thing I discovered on that journey was that, okay, yes, you know, Stalin was an intellectual, a man of ideas, a great reader. He was a communist. He was a Marxist. Right? But the thing I discovered, which I didn't really understand before, was that he was a feeling intellectual, right? The emotional depth and power of his ideology and politics, right? And it's that emotionality, the emotional force of his ideology and his politics, which enabled him to actually rule in the particularly violent dictatorial way that he did. So the emotionality of Stalin as a dictator and an intellectual, that was the crucial revelation for me. But there's also another point which I'd like to mention here, because it's not actually in the book, is that, you know, you might say, well, Okay, so he was a feeling, emotional, intellectual. Where did that emotionality come from? And he asked that question, I think, is that it came from Starling's early Christian upbringing. Mm-hmm. Before Starling was a devout Marxist, he was a devout Christian. And I think that there's this transmission of Starling's emotional religiosity into his Marxism, communism, and socialism.
Yeah, well, I mean, many scholars before you noted that this fervent attitude towards Marxism and socialism was simply, you know, another form of religion for many of the leaders of his time, many Bolsheviks at least. Now, you mentioned that many of Stalin's books contain extensive markings, which, to quote you, reveal that he valued ideas as much as power, and that he was a true believer in the strength of the word. And it reminds me of the opening verses of the Bible. In the beginning was the word, which could also be translated as in the beginning was logos, the meaning-making capacity. And I think you already partially answered my question, but I want to pose it nonetheless. Do you think there was something religious or numinous about the way Stalin related to not just the word, but knowledge, the gnosis?
Yeah, just to return to the earlier point you made, you know, a lot of scholars have noticed the connection between, you know, Stalin's religious upbringing and his Marxism. I think that's true, but I think the thing about the library is that you can actually see that in the sources, on the pages. You can see Stalin's feelings, yeah? And I suppose the other thing is that ideologically, Stalin definitively did, break with his religious upbringing, yeah? Stalin didn't see, okay, he was a dogmatic Marxist. He believed in the intrinsic and eternal truth of Marxism, but that wasn't for him a matter of faith. It was a matter of what he considered to be scientific observation, yeah? So, you know, there's an emotional connection between Stalin as a Christian and Stalin as a communist, but the intellectual connection is much more tenuous.
Now, as you write in your book, like all the Bolshevik leaders, Stalin believed that reading could help transform not just people's ideas and consciousness, but human nature itself. He saw writers and as engineers of the human soul, which is the subject you dedicate a separate chapter in your book. And when somebody is so eager to transform the human nature or remake the human soul, I think there is usually something that they cannot accept as is, and most likely in themselves. What do you think made Stalin so bent on remaking the human soul? And I'm asking here not you, I'm asking you not as a historian, but truly as a human being, because it's a very intimate, personal intuition.
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, a very personal question. And I'm going to give you a personal answer. All the Bolshevik leaders were intellectuals, right? All of them believed in reading, engagement of ideas. All of them had big libraries. So Stalin wasn't unique in that respect. Okay, yeah, and yes, this question about transformation of self, why was he constantly, why was he and the Bolsheviks constantly grasping in that direction? And they're doing that because they're idealists, they're utopians. They genuinely kind of like believe that this transformation of human nature that they're seeking is possible. Of course, they don't achieve it, because that's one of the fundamental failures of the Soviet project, of Soviet socialism, the failure to actually create that utopia that they're striving for. Now, personally, I can understand that, because I was a utopian and I did this myself as a young man. So I understand that striving. And I also understand, you know, the personal emotional thing of, you know, trying to grasp something which you can't quite get there, and you understand, you know the difficulties, you have the sort of like doubts and skepticism about it. So I have there's a lot of personal insight into this book as well. But of course, the difference between me and Stalin is that Stalin remained an idealist. He remained a utopian. He was forever grasping for this ideal future.
His power protected him from reality to some extent. And I'm also an avid student of psychology, and in psychology, idealization, mentalization, rationalization, you know, tendency to make things abstract, they are considered to be typical psychological defenses when you don't want to connect with the you know, the human nature in yourself when it seems to you so, you know, imperfect or disdainful that you would rather think about something, you know, shiny down the line than address it in yourself.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. But let's not forget the point I'm making earlier about the emotional basis of Stalin's beliefs and his ideology and politics. And let's understate the importance of kind of the rational core of it. Yes. You know, he has these ideas, he believed these ideas, and there are rational grounds, there are empirical grounds for his belief. Now, I'm not saying he's right, but I don't deny the rationality of its Marxism. So, you know, it's a combination. This is it's a combination of his character, personality and emotionality. It's a combination of very typical human psychological traits, but it's also a function of his rationalist ideology and politics as well.
Can I ask you something? Because you mentioned in your book that you see him as what we would now call emotionally intelligent. You don't believe that his feelings or, you know, sensing abilities are split off from his cognitive capacity. And I wonder if you've been able to track not only his emotional reading of others, but his own authentic feelings or maybe even suffering in those markings on the sides of the books.
Well, I try to do that as best I can in the book, but, you know, in a sense, it's impossible for me to actually summarise that without actually repeating what's in the book.
Did you have these inklings in yourself when you thought, OK, I think this is Stalin writing as a human being rather than as a great leader he imagined himself to be?
Oh, in terms of his library, yeah, that's the whole point of it. Yeah, the whole point of Stalin's library, his private reading, yes, his personal
world ideas. But he knew that he would be read sometime later.
Yeah, well, I think that's probably true maybe towards the end of his life, yes. Yeah, he must have been aware that he would become the object of the attention of people like me or other researchers, just like Lenin had become in his lifetime. No, the actual quality of his markings, it's very spontaneous, it's very authentic. Right. That's absolutely clear. There is an element of performance here, but it's a very, very subordinate element. In other contexts where of a confidential context where Stalin is speaking or writing or editing, yeah, then it is much, much more of a performance for the eyes of others. He's putting on a show. That's not the case when we're talking about his personal life. And that's the interest, that's the power of the source. And what I try to do, I try to, you know, not tell you this, but I try to show the reader how this works.
For now, we have to take a very short break. We will be back to discussing it in a short time. Thank you very much.
There's no end in sight over how you're going to continue to destroy the Earth.
It's the case of the madness of the people.
I tried to go to the gym, but I'm certainly not ready to fight Russia.
This is all so absurd.
This is third world lunacy. Brainwashing.
As Ursula von der Leyen likes to say, we have the tools.
Why don't we just start with stability and business deals?
What planet are we living on, man?
We have very good propaganda in our press here in Europe.
I think we don't know the aftermath.
Anytime that you're not allowed to ask questions, you should ask all of the questions.
The more questions asked, the better the answers will be.
Welcome back to Worlds Apart with Jeffrey Roberts, Emeritus Professor of History at the University College Cork and author of Stalin's Library, A Dictator and His Books. Professor Roberts, in your book you suggest that Stalin did not recoil from reading the works of his arch enemies like Leon Trotsky. He was also very much interested in the history of the Tsarist times, which Soviet propaganda at the time, official Soviet propaganda, fully dismissed. And In order to engage with that kind of material you consider wrong or adversarial, one needs to have a degree of flexibility, versatility, and tolerance, which is not how Stalin is remembered. What do you think compelled him to engage with the other? Do you think it was primarily his own personal drive or perhaps the commands of the office?
I'm not sure I'd use the word tolerance in relation to Stalin, but certainly flexibility.
Okay, and versatility.
Yeah, absolute versatility. Yeah, in the context of him being a dogmatic Marxist. Yeah, it wasn't a big surprise to me when I discovered that Stalin as an intellectual read to learn. Yeah, he was a learning intellectual. That's not such a big surprise. But what did surprise me was how much he engaged with his political opponents and how much he learnt from his political opponents. Yeah. Okay. Stalin was a Marxist. He believed in Marxism. A lot of his reading was Marxist stuff, socialist stuff, communist stuff. Right. But he was prepared to read anything and anyone. Right. And he was prepared to learn from, take ideas from anyone. And that, I mean, the case study I use in the book is the study is Trotsky. Stalin was much more enamored of Trotsky as an intellectual. For quite a long time.
Let me quote what Trotsky wrote about Stalin. He described him as gifted with practicality, a strong will, and persistence in carrying out his aims, but also devoid of creative imagination, restricted in his learning methods and political horizons, and stubbornly empirical in his mind. And Trotsky also wrote that Stalin always seemed to him, at least, as a man who was destined to play second or third fiddle, and him playing first was not due to Stalin's own talents, but rather the backsliding of the system. I wonder if you detected any sort of intellectual inferiority on the part of Stalin. Don't you think he was trying to compensate for something that he saw in Trotsky but lacked in himself?
No, I don't see that at all. Stalin was supremely confident. As an intellectual, he was his own man, his own Marxist. Just, his autonomy as a person, as a political actor, and as an ideology came from within himself as an intellectual. Yeah, he didn't kowtow to anyone. Didn't even, he presented himself as being Lenin's pupil. Yeah, the best student of Lenin. But he didn't. he was a follower of Lenin. But he wasn't a prisoner of Lenin and of Lenin's thinking.
His personality cult, I think, clearly demonstrates that. But
Trotsky's view, denigration of Stalin as an intellectual, very, very influential view, and it's like shaped perceptions of Stalin throughout many decades. Now,
especially perhaps in the West, because
absolutely. But that perception has changed even in the West, and partly a function of the fact, because of the collapse of the Soviet Union, the opening up of the Russian archives, historians and others have much, much more materials to work with, and this has painted a completely different picture. Not just of Stalin, but of the whole Soviet system, from the one you get from Trotsky. And one of the discoveries of the post-Soviet period in the archives has been the extent to which Stalin was an intellectual and engaged with ideas. And my book is part of that body of work. But of course, I have a particular and a sustained focus on Stalin as an intellectual, particularly in relation to his life as a reader and his personal library.
As you point out, Stalin's access to foreign books was limited, not only because of the logistics, but also because he didn't know any other language other than Russian and Georgian. And yet you point out that Stalin had a high regard and diligent interest for his political contemporaries, like Winston Churchill or Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Do you think that interest was reciprocated? Do you think they saw an equal in him as he saw in them?
Absolutely. I mean, one of my other specialities is, as you must know, was Stalin as a war leader, Stalin during the Second World War, and particularly the relationship between Stalin, Churchill, and Roosevelt. Yeah, and there's no doubt the great respect that Roosevelt and Churchill had for Stalin, including respect for Stalin's knowledge. knowledgeability and the profundity of his thinking.
What I found fascinating is that Stalin studied the American Constitution, and I think what's almost unknown both in Russia and in the West was that he was a he presided over and was very much engaged in the works of the Soviet Constitutional Commission that was tasked with drafting the Soviet Constitution of 1936, that at least in writing attempted to give or to encourage more active grassroots political participation. And that constitution was passed barely a year before the Great Terrors, which sent millions of people to their deaths or to the Gulag. And one thing that I, as a Russian, cannot understand is this idiosyncrasy between putting so much time and effort into studying how various societies were governed, because I think that was his key interest in all the, his reading pursuits, and yet reverting so quickly, so ruthlessly to the tyranny of the Iron Hand. How do you understand it? You know, the patience with books and total impatience with the imperfections of life and governing.
Stalin's overriding priority was to defend socialism, defend the revolution from its enemies, and to do whatever he could to contribute to socialism. And, you know, he was prepared to engage in all kinds of projects, activities, which he saw as furthering the cause, including, you know, you know, this new constitution, the 1936 constitution, all kinds of other things. But in the end, you know, he was prepared to do whatever was necessary to deploy whatever.
So defending the revolution at the cost to, at the huge cost to his society and his people.
Absolutely, because he was a utopian. Yeah, he believed this action was necessary. He believed, he said it many times, this action is forced upon us by our enemies, right? If we don't do this, our enemies are going to crush us. That is the lesson of history. Stalin's a reader. Okay, Stalin was a Marxist. Marxism was his big thing. But his favourite topic was history and the lessons of history. Yeah, you too, you mentioned the Constitution. I was very surprised about Stalin's interest in constitutional law. And as you indicated, it's an interest that seems to come when they're discussing the new Soviet constitution, and he does his own research, which is another very important point. Stalin always does his own research, always does his own reading.
But Professor Roberts, I mean, the split that I see here, or at least perceive, is that he put so much effort and interest in researching those patterns, you know, constitutional governing, etc. But he doesn't have the strength, the capacity, the patience to put it into practice. Because if you want to defend the revolution, you can defend it by your actions, you know, putting those ideas into practice and materializing, realizing them. But it's almost like he pursues them and then he drops and reverts to the old methods that he's defending against.
Yeah, well, I think he pursues them as far as he can. But as I said, you know, he's prepared to do what's necessary. But the kind of argument you've made is the kind of argument that many people have made in relation to Stalin, which is the disjunction between his theory and his practice. And, you know, in its the limitations, I mean, okay, I've emphasised Stalin as an intellectual, very serious intellectual, very serious reader. In sometimes he can be quite profound and certainly very, very, very effective. But in the end, you know, he's a limited
kind of... He's a human being at the end of the day.
His ideology and politics are deeply flawed, right? His political practice is hugely kind of problematic for the reasons you've said, because of, you know, the impact of his you know, dictatorial rule on society and on millions of people. So, you know, I'm not trying to cover anything up in my book. Yeah, it's really important to understand. That's why it's called A Dictator and His Books. And throughout the whole book, I'm engaging with the questions you're raising about Stalin's dictatorial rule and trying to provide some explanation, some answer to you know, why this kind of, like, actually quite sensitive feeling intellectual in many ways can do all this bad stuff as well.
Now, we talked before about this quasi-religious attitude that Stalin had towards books and knowledge, the Gnosis. And I wonder, to what extent do you think the phenomenon of Stalin was specific to Russia and its collective soul? Because if we look at the Russian history, Russian literature of the 19th or the beginning of the 20th century, with all this painful soul-searching, I wonder if the emergence of leaders like Stalin or Lenin, who was also an autodidact, was inevitable as far as Russia is concerned.
Stalin, of course, was very kind of like skeptical about all this stuff about, you know, the Russian soul and the essential.
But he is a very, in some sense, a very typical representative of it. You know, its own way, distinct way out of the attack, doing things by yourself, exploring.
Being
very stubborn,
I suppose I'll make two points, though. I mean, I don't think Stalin would see himself that way. I don't think he would accept your analysis. And I don't think I do either. You know, I don't think you need to resort to those kind of explanations in order to, you know, I think it's much more straightforward to actually see Stalin for what he was in terms of his own beliefs, right? As a communist, as a Marxist, as a political actor in the modern era.
He was also a product, a child of his society and that society's long history and certain predilections and patterns.
But he was fundamentally a product of his own, as you say, he's an autodidact, of his own self-education, right? Right, of his political beliefs and commitments, Marxism, communism. You know, it makes much more sense to locate Stalin in that context, I think, anyway, than it does in, you know, the context of the Russian tradition. But maybe, you know, maybe that's me speaking. Mm-hmm. That's me speaking from my experience, because as I mentioned earlier in the interview, you know, as a young man, I was very like Stalin, except I was a pacifist rather than, I didn't like violence, but very like him in many ways as a political activist. So I'm speaking from my experience, mm-hmm. right? But maybe from a Russian perspective, Stalin can appear very different.
I don't want to get too close to contemporary politics, but I do think that this sort of autodidact Gnostic tendency coupled with a sense of Russia's distinct destiny is very inherent to the Russian leadership. And if we look at Vladimir Putin, he's also autodidact. He also has a sense of special way for Russia, not exceptional, but special way for Russia. And I think he's very open about it. He reads history books, not for leisure, but for governing insights.
What do you think about it? There are lots of very interesting comparisons to be made between Stalin and Putin. I don't see Putin as an intellectual, I have to say, in the sense that, okay, Putin is engaged with ideas, but I don't get the impression anywhere they're as central here to his consciousness, to his life being, that they were to Stalin. So Putin is certainly engaged with ideas, with reading, with literature, and of course with history. Yeah, I mean, Putin is as fanatical about history as Stalin was. Actually, you know, the two main comparisons that always spring to my mind when I'm thinking about Stalin and Putin is two things. Firstly, they're both patriots, and secondly, they're both devoted multinationalists, and that's the great continuity I see between the Soviet Union, the USSR, and the Russian Federation. They're both authentically multinational, multi-ethnic states, and both Stalin and Putin committed to defending that multinational character of their respective states.
I have one last question, and we only have a few seconds for you to answer it. But I wonder if this sense of autonomy is also one of the main underlying reasons for the current confrontation between Russia and the West, this argument over logos, over the word with capital W, the right to the word and the right to come up with your own thinking and your own way forward for your country.
I would tend to agree with that. In a way, you know, in the West, you have the kind of like ideological fervor that always brings to my mind the ideological fervor of the Soviet period, the Soviet system, right? And you know, the ideological fervor, fanaticism, and dogmatism of Stalin as a Marxist and communist. So I think that it's a very interesting point that you made there.
We have to leave it there, and thank you very much for your time, and thank you, congratulations on this very intriguing and very insightful book.
Well, thank you for a very intriguing and insightful interview.
My pleasure. And hopefully it was also your pleasure. Thank you for watching, and hope to see you again on Worlds Apart.